Welcome to Definitely Maybe Agile, a podcast where Peter Madison and David Shurrock discuss the complexities of adopting new ways of working at scale. Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of Definitely Maybe Agile with your hosts, Peter Madison and David Shurrock. How are you today, Dave?
I'm doing fantastic, Peter. It's been a long time that we've actually taken the time out to record a conversation. I think we've had plenty of conversations, but actually taking the time to record something. We've certainly been thinking about how we can pull some ideas together. And I think the format that we'll be leaning towards will hopefully be even more valuable for our listeners.
Yes, yeah, exactly. And we decided we would try and kick this off and see if people are interested in hearing us talk about some books and some content, and or maybe bring some people in and have some other conversations. And these are the kind of things we're thinking of experimenting with a little. And this week we've been busy reading, so we have a book topic to talk about, right?
Well, I mean, we're always reading, of course. I mean, this is how you stay ahead as any sort of coach or facilitator, consultant. But what was interesting as we pulled our list of books together is trying to look at something that might be relevant to our readers when we're thinking about digital transformations or any sort of organizational transformation. So Mike Burrows has been in this space for many, many years. He's a obviously very well-recognized author and practitioner in this space. And I think his book, Agenda Shift, really gives us a great place to start.
I think so too. I mean, it's a book that and a practice that I've known for many years, and I've used quite a lot of the exercises in it with many of the clients I've worked with quite effectively. And so I think it's a great place to start and have a conversation about it. And this time we're reading the second edition, so the updated new version with all the extra stuff in it.
Well, that's for sure. And so maybe just to start off, I mean, Agenda Shift is Mike Burrows has kind of consolidated many of the practices and the experiences that he's had working with many different clients and really spelled it out in a pretty short book. It's a nice straightforward read. And one of the, I mean, right off the bat, what I've found interesting is there's so many books that start at that high level of principles and you have to work hard to pull it down to actually apply it in your context. And I think what I really appreciated about Agenda Shift is that it's almost reads like a how-to guide for those of us facilitating these conversations. So it isn't, you know, it's not a framework that you're going to go and, you know, cookie cutter over what we're up to. It's how do you emerge the right approach in your organization?
Yeah. And it's nice the way that he's laid out each chapter in here's how it would go, and here's the method, here's the exercise, and then the second part of the chapter is like here's some theories and principles and other exercises and things you might want to try, and what's underlying this, what the mechanics behind the reason we chose to do this at this point in the in the sequence.
And I think when I think about the conversations that we've recorded over the last few years as we've had these discussions, we're often walking that fine line between sort of consulting or guiding as a coach versus and really trying to achieve some sort of significant, you know, steps forward in an organization, while at the same time being respectful of the human aspect, the people side. And what I really appreciate as a reminder to me has been in coaching organizations for many, many years is the way I think it's just the way I've been reading and consuming information in the last couple of years is it brought back the almost like the basics, right, of open space technologies, of liberating structures, of the care to take with the language, with the questions that we use. And I think, you know, if we think of the many transformations that we've been involved with in the last few years, I think that reminder of, you know, really working with the human behavior side really kind of struck home to me. I thought that was a really great, just a reminder of get back into that headspace.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of empathy in the writing and in the model, in the way that he Mike puts them all across. It's about that generative concept, but with very much the idea of focus on the people, focus on what they're bringing to the table, and bring out the most you possibly can, help people through that. So it's very, very powerful in that respect.
I love, there's a great quote in there that is just one of those tweetable quotes, which is the empathy is a change agent superpower. And so many times, you know, we're experienced, we've done this for a while, and you can step into an organization, a transformation, and anybody involved in that transformation, it's very easy to see a solution or see a path to go forward and then try and bring people to that path, to that realization, to effectively take a me first approach. I know where we need to go, and I'm just trying to persuade people to see the same thing that I'm seeing. And that whole empathy piece is just, and so many of the exercises are a reminder. And this, I think, is important for us to recognize. Agenda shift doesn't give you the answers. It's not telling you this is the framework and this is what you have to do. Mm-hmm. And this is what you need to impose in your organization. It's giving you a generative, I'd almost say like a human-centric conversational. How do you emerge, identify where you need to spend time? How do you come to the right sort of outcome-based approaches there? And I think that's it's if you're going in there for a framework that you can kind of cookie cutter in, you're not going to come out with the framework that you were thinking you were going to come in for. If you're going there with how do I get buy-in? How do I bring people on that journey? Now I think you're talking. There's some really powerful, simple phrases. The thought given into the questions and the language is just tremendous.
It is. And I love some of the sort of the key pieces that he's bringing to the table. It's not about a specific set of obstacles or outcomes. It's about how do you create outcomes that are relevant to you? And then how do you look at that? How do you start to analyze that, bring it together? How do you explore what those might be? How do you come up with your solutions, right? Which is essentially a coaching approach to looking at this, right? And the person is whole and they are who they are. They can discover this, right?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I think we should also recognize, and it's probably worth us sticking in the footnotes for this particular conversation, but there's a range of different templates. And again, from a tools perspective, it's a really great resource, an explanation, not just of, you know, here's a template, but how to use it. And there's templates, there's surveys, there's a number of different references. There's also a very complete reading list and so on. So I was actually looking at this thinking, if I'm an agile coach or a transformation agent, you know, building up that experience, this would be one of those dog-eared books that you're using for a few years as you hone your skills in front of clients and you're trying to figure out exactly how to overcome some of the objections, the dynamics that we've all seen in those conversations, in those workshops.
Right, exactly. Yeah. And I have found over the year, I've used quite a few of these exercises many times myself. And I think the ones that I've used most are the ones at the beginning, like the opening ones, the discovery exercises, the celebration 5W ones, and the good obstacle, bad obstacle, as these is gutted in here. So it's taking the time to think about like what type of obstacle, how have I defined what I'm looking to do? I liked one of the ones there, going from good obstacle to bad obstacle, which was around going from saying, instead of saying lack of quality is the obstacle, talking about quality expectations exceed our ability to deliver. So this thinking about things in more positive terms, essentially, before we go about thinking about, well, what outcomes would we like instead and how you go.
Yeah, and I really liked, there's a number of key things. I mean, have a look at the book and take a look at it and put some of those ideas in practice. If you're familiar with a lot of the facilitation practices, you'll see a very, very deep understanding and very strong application of those as you come through. If you're not familiar, trust the wording in the page and follow through. That would be the bit that I pick up. Interestingly, where I've used a lot of the practices was on the other end of the scale, if you like. I spend a lot of time with leadership trying to help them explain some of the things that they're looking at. I particularly, a huge fan of Dave Snowden, as anybody who's listened in, and some of the ideas that have been brought up. So the option approach mapping piece is something that is very much, you know, you just leads to some fantastic conversations.
Yeah,
I thought the way that was sort of extracted and pulled through was really powerful. And it's I'm just thinking on a number of conversations I'm having right now where this is becoming more and more and more urgent as an appreciation or understanding that, you know, organizations have to really begin understanding the problem space that they're working on, how they can translate that into actionable actions. Because of course, you know, I just had a conversation this week about the risk of paralysis analysis, and it is a very real concern. And yet there's some great tools here to sort of help people appreciate that and change.
Yeah, it's funny. I was talking about that right before this, and it's a bit of a tangent from the book, but I think it's somewhat relevant. But this idea that I was using the Potter's parable to explain the two potters sit down at the wheel, and they've got a bunch of clay. They've got to build the best pot, and one of them spends like an hour and a half of the 2 hours planning out exactly what to do before trying to build the perfect pot. The other person just starts building, and they make as many pots as they possibly can. And so who do you think has the best pot?
Yes.
And so there's bits, it's really good. I mean, there's lots of...
Now, as I sort of think about it, there's a couple of things, and I love that parable as well. I've used it so many times in lots of different contexts. Here's one of there are two things, like as you're getting to the end of that, sort of two realizations that I thought were really powerful. And I want to focus specifically on one just for the moment, which is the left to right versus right to left.
Mm-hmm.
So broadly speaking, that is, if I'm going left to right, I'm starting off with, you know, planning things, understanding what the gap is between where we want to go and where we are, putting that plan together. So it's what we're taught from school onwards, right? Sit down, think about things, plan it out, left to right. Now, what's interesting there's a lots of security around that as you move from left to right. But of course, from an emergent perspective, from putting the customer need, the end user's objectives, the organization's objectives front and center, working from outcomes on the right hand side, and then looking to the left to see what are the areas that we need to improve, change, build some new capabilities, whatever that might be. That sort of right to left thinking, I thought that sort of description was a really powerful way of immediately understanding some of the friction that we get in any organization when we try and introduce complexity thinking, try and introduce outcome-based thinking. Just simple things like product versus project thinking, product being right to left, project being left to right, as an example.
Yeah, I find that very powerful too. I found it most often, of course, and he uses it in the book in this way too, is when he's talking about Kanban and this like, once you've got a Kanban model in place, that we look at the board from right to left, we don't look at it from left to right, and then walking people through why that is, like, what can we do to move the next thing across? Because if we don't, we're not freeing up capacity for the next things that need to come in. So understanding how that works from a systems perspective, what that's doing to the system, and how that causes work to move forward. I think it is a very powerful piece. Yeah, I would agree. Mm-hmm. And he uses it here both in that sense and in that strategy sense, as you're saying, as a way of saying, here's my strategy, yep, here are my outcomes. Yep. Now let's track back from that and see what that leads us to do.
No, it's a really a thoughtful, like, that one is something that I'll continue to noodle on, because of course, there's no straightforward answers. We know there isn't. It's a complexity piece in and of itself. But what that led to is being able to reframe some of the challenges that we see in organizations. And I think there's a great sentence where he really kind of outlines that one. Read the sentence straight out, which is, legacy structures modeling legacy behaviors so strongly that they impede rather than support transformation. And it's really difficult. You can't call that out, because people will fight back on it. They're going to say, no, hold on, we understand where we're going. We'll adjust our legacy structures and adjust our legacy behaviors. That's a little bit of the, we are always going to do what we always know how to do. We feel safe. We feel comfortable with it. And it actively prevents the transformation happening.
I think the missing piece out of that is the incentives.
Yeah.
So you need incentives and behaviors and structure as the support. And this is actually, John Smart put it that way, but it's also something I've been thinking about this for a while. Incentives isn't just necessarily monetary incentives. Yeah. Incentives can also be power structures as well in your organization. Incentives can be also lots of things, like, what is causing the behavior that you see, like, why am I incented to do that? And if you see this a lot in what we that the permafrost layer in that sort of frozen middle, where the top of the organization is saying, we're going to go agile, we're going to change, and we're going to be faster and better and customer focused and cloud first and la da 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 da. And they say all the right words. And the folks at the bottom go, yay! And the people in the middle go, okay, but you're still asking me to hit those numbers.
Yeah.
What I did last year allows me to hit those numbers, so I'm going to do the same thing I did last year, and nothing changes.
Well, and you're still funding this, and you're still funding that. So it's that incentives, whether it's from where the money sits and how it's being used, whether it's the hierarchies and how we're who we're reporting to and how that's structured. I mean, there's a lot of these different plays. Now, again, there's some great models in Agenda Shift for us to start investigating and reading about and understanding and applying. I think, and I think this is something that we've talked about a lot, emergent transformation. We need to start a transformation through emergent activities. We've got to get buy-in. We've got to co-create the understanding of where we are and what we need to change. There's no doubt that's really well defined in the book. I think as we think of, you know, accelerating that application and application in a broader context, there's a sort of a pull nature of once that change has been set in motion, how do you accelerate it? And that standardization is an approach, not particularly code. I see that sort of as the next few chapters, if that makes sense, right? But there's that really, and I think this is one of the key things, is you need both. You need that co-creation, you need that, but you also need that, how do you push the button, accelerate and get standardize some of those changes in there. DevOps, for example, tends to do that really well because it lends itself to it. There's a lot of technology, a lot of automation, a lot of tools that allow you to consolidate some of those decisions and allow you to accelerate that change. Harder to do in some of the other examples that we've shared around digital transformations, whether it's domains or business model and some of those other ones that we discussed.
Yeah, it's always difficult. And especially as we always say, is you need to start with the people first and then get to what the tooling is that's going to reinforce that set of behaviors. So having the right pieces in place, but there's always this chicken and egg situation there where it isn't either or, we need both, but we do need to get the people on board first with the idea of where we're going so that we're successful with the introduction of the other pieces, which is always a fun fun game, to say the least.
Any other kind of standout pieces that you drew from that reading?
I think some of the pieces that I really liked, I like the option approach piece too, the whole tie into Kenefin and the how he presents that information. I've used that. I actually used it as a reference in a recent course I recorded, so on value stream management, for exactly that reason. It is a very powerful way of approaching that and understanding what it actually means and sort of internalizing and actually using it, I find. So I think it is a good way of communicating that. The relationship between option relationship mapping and Wardley mapping is interesting to me as well, because I've used Wardley mapping, so value chains over evolution in places, but whereas he's using it here in a like an option, the relationships between options and visibility, the customer, which is also interesting, right? So I found that one quite intriguing. One of the models that I feel I need more time to go away and digest that's also in that mapping section is that taste X matrix one around the four dimensions of strategy.
I kind of
read through that and went, oh yeah, I'm going to have to come back to that because it's and think about that a little bit more about
that. Is very true. Yeah. There is a lot of moving parts in that. Even recognize some of the challenges with scaling it. But again, really, I think part of what we're talking about here, and this is something we've got to remember that sits behind Agenda Shift, but also a lot of Mike Burrow's work and many of the people he calls out in the discussion, which is the impact, I'd say the impact Kanban has on organizational change. Sometimes we come at Agile from that view of teams and how teams behave and so on. And what I think is, we've talked about it. We've maybe not name checked it quite as well, but Kanban at an organizational change level is very, very powerful and is underrated perhaps, or at least not talked about as much as it could be. And I think that underpins many of those conversations that we're hinting at here.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it's, I had this conversation the other day with a client a new client, and the way they introduced their knowledge of Agile was, the you know, that agile practice that we all know, indicating that agile equals scrum and then DevOps equals structure. And it was like,
yeah, there's more to it than that. Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
A little bit
for
more sure. to it than that. But I think one of the other pieces in there I quite liked was the 2MBM piece as well. The just as a nice mnemonic around meaning before metric and measure before method.
That's clever. Don't you hate it when somebody comes up with a mnemonic like that that is just pretty solid? Yeah. But I mean, joking aside, again, more of that sort of right to left thinking of stop, because we're in a world where everybody's talking about OKRs, everyone's talking about some sort of metrics and so on, and delivery. And I think it's important. We need to start bringing that back into the conversation. But that meaning before metric or measure before method, absolutely. Think about what you're trying to look at and understand it before targeting the metrics, right? And I think if I remember rightly, he uses the example of cycle time, and we've had this conversation many times where we'll talk about, you know, focus on cycle time as another one that I'll often use is frequency of release. This is just that reminder of it isn't ubiquitous. We need to sit and understand it. It reminds me of there's an article recently in Harvard Business Review about Toyota and how they've actually built queues to manage uncertainty in the supply chain, which is the opposite of what anybody who's trying to follow, you know, just-in-time thinking thinks, perhaps, at that sort of, you know, primary level or introductory level. They're experts, as in with capital EX extra everything, right? And they're using those things as they bring it in and do the right thing. It depends where you are, what the problem is you're trying to solve.
I don't know if you have seen the same article, but what they're doing there is they're utilizing the data that they know about how they consume within the system. And so if there's 100,000 parts that go into a car, they identify the 200 or whatever it is that are the ones that, if they're not available, will slow down the entire system, and they build the queues of those.
Yeah. And what I found, I mean, you know, that's somewhat interesting, but what I found even better about that article was the way they said that it's seasonal as well. They adjust the queues based on the risk associated with bad weather, you know, and the deliveries being impacted by that bad weather. That's a level of appreciation or understanding about what influences your ability to deliver, which is so far beyond, at least, the organizations I work with, way beyond we're often talking about.
And I'm totally making up the numbers there, but it's it was because it was a little while ago I read that article. I was impressed by the amount of attention to detail and knowledge about how your system works to be able to do that is incredible.
Right. So maybe in closing, just again, Mike Burrow's Agenda Shift, the second edition is the one we fortuitously both of us were reading at that time. Hopefully some of the insights that we're pulling out really resonate with some of our listeners. Any questions, as always, any observations, comments that you might want to add, please drop us an email, and it's comments. No. I've forgotten the email address, Pisa.
Feedback at definitelymaybeagile.com. I got to put my radio tone voice on for that.
Okay. And looking forward to, we'll be picking up these conversations a little bit more regularly now going forward. So looking forward to a few more of these over the coming weeks. Again, feedback at definitelymaybeagile.com. Also, take a look, because we've mentioned a couple of references and links and so on. We'll make sure they're all in the footer so you can get hold of those. In the meantime, again, Peter, always a pleasure.
Yeah, always a pleasure, Dave. You've been listening to Definitely Maybe Agile, the podcast where your hosts, Peter Madison and David Sharrock, focus on the art and science of digital, agile, and DevOps at scale.